Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novi Williams, and this is the Lions and Ravens and Chiefs, oh my, sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
Oh my God. No, you didn't. You didn't.
Oh, we did it.
You didn't.
Sometimes you want me to be less literal. Sometimes you want more fun.
But cliche. Come on. You want to take another shot? I'm going to give you the mulligan.
It was all worth it to see your groan. That lets me know. I'm doing a good job.
But I want to get clear. Do you think about this ahead of time, or is it like,
no.
Okay, good. That's
I
good. I don't,
about
I don't
it
want
probably
you to.
No more than 30 seconds before we start.
Right. Okay. Not that it shows. I was just asking. I think if we Twitter poll this one, everybody was going to agree with me. That's not good.
Love it.
That is not good. Oh, God. All right, but we have the Final Four. Is that trademarked? Final Four trademark? Yeah, sorry. Normally college basketball, but we got Final Four in the NFL for the big game because I do know Super Bowl is trademarked. We should, you know what? Story idea, and I hope nobody steals it from listening. We should do a whole thing on the background on the Super Bowl trademark, how strictly it's enforced, how people have tried to get around it. That'd be a fun story.
Yeah, the Superb Owl and all that.
Yeah, the Superb Owl is my favorite. That's from MKTG, right?
I don't remember who it was. But
I think it's MKTG.
A great idea.
Superb Owl's great.
Not super working idea. Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, all right, what excites you? Ravens, Chiefs, or should we talk about the games we had? Ravens, Chiefs, Niners, Lions. What excites you there?
I mean, I think the big thing here, the Chiefs still being around. I watched the Chiefs-Bills game on Sunday night.
You watched the whole football game?
I watched almost the entire thing. The sheer amount of Kelce, not just on the broadcast.
Which Kelce?
Both.
Oh, just
in
Kelce
the advertising,
in general. Yeah.
And obviously, every time Travis caught the ball, there was a shot up to the box where his brother was shirtless and drinking, and where Taylor Swift was. Maybe it's been this way the whole time. I was shocked by the, between the commercials, Travis is in, feels like four or five different ad campaigns. Jason is in ads. I didn't see the mom, but I know Mama Kelsey's out there somewhere. the whole thing seemed to revolve around Kelce and Swift, and the fact that they are continuing to advance in this playoffs must make the NFL thrilled. And if the Chiefs can beat the Ravens this week, and we get the Kelce Taylor Swift phenomenon leading into the biggest media and sporting event of the year, the biggest marketing event of the year in America, that is a commercial money. It's a perfect storm. So that's the thing that jumped out to me this weekend.
All right, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's just everywhere, and we'll talk about Kristen Juszczyk, and there's so much that goes with it. But when I saw Jason Kelce flexing. And I don't know, you're not an old school wrestling fan, but do you remember the guy Jim the Anvil Neidhart?
I do not. No.
That's I don't know why. I don't know if he looked like whatever. I just kept getting, from my youth. I remember just like Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Like that's what I kept seeing. That's what went through my brain. So you can go Google him later, but that's what you know. Again, we all know this brain works in weird ways. But sort of if you take it as a full-fledged 360 marketing just firestorm, my Lord, like how, you can dissect the game, the brands, the individuals, the league in so many different ways.
Lamar Jackson, the next wave of quarterback star and one of, if not the, maybe actually maybe the highest paid player in the league, if not one of them.
Yep.
Yeah, obviously Mahomes and Kelce and Swift on the Kansas City side. Detroit has been a great story, a franchise, one of the old classic NFL franchises that has not had success in a very long time, having a lot of success, and really interesting to think about if they can make the Super Bowl, what the car companies, which are typically big advertisers in the Super Bowl, what are they doing?
Well, I mean, let's not forget the owner is tied to Ford, of course.
So owner is tied to Ford.
Now, do I have to disclose that I drive an Explorer? Do I have a conflict of interest?
You do not have to.
And by the way, I also have an EcoSport. So it would be like a teeny, teeny wide receiver. And what I mean, it's not the Expedition. What would, is that a tight end? Would the Explorer be on the, not a fullback?
I think maybe tight end. Yeah.
Yeah. Tight end. Faster, yeah. You know, big, but not so, but not the Expedition, yeah, which would be the fullback,
yeah, or a bunch of things,
or
yeah.
the refrigerator Perry. What car, the Hummer, is that the refrigerator Perry?
Yeah, that's the Expedition Hummer.
Okay, kind of just checking. Yeah. Again, I'm sorry for the way my brain works. That should not have happened, but it
amazing.
Did. I can't help it.
And the last team we should talk about, we haven't really touched on them that much, but the 49ers, right? The team that was the best team in the regular season so far this year. They've got a fascinating stadium story. They just bought Leeds, the European soccer team. From a off-field business standpoint, the 49ers are maybe doing some of the most interesting stuff in the NFL when it comes to diversifying their portfolio, looking beyond the real estate and media that we talk about all the time into team ownership is absolutely fascinating. Yeah,
and cross-platform, don't forget, you know, the 49ers are stakeholders in Elevate.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Along with Harris Blitzer.
Exactly. So the final four here in the NFL is just chock full of business stories. One thing I do want to bring up, Scott, because it's something you mentioned to me today in the office, the ratings are going bonkers. This has been an insane season and starting into postseason for the NFL. The NFL is just at the start of its 11 years of media deals. The league has an opt-out 7 years in.
Yeah, you and I were talking about, did they screw up not having an annual opt-out?
I mean, yeah, I was going to pose it to you. No. It sounds like you think yes, but was there a mistake here, business mistake by the NFL, given how strong, at least early into this deal, the ratings are, that they can't reopen these talks before 7 years?
Right. Well, would you guess that the NFL would have had the leverage in these talks to say, we want a two-year, every 2 years, we want a reopen clause? And by the way,
I
was thinking, if you hit certain metrics, if we hit certain metrics, if you want to, you know, write that caveat in. So you think, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they do that?
Yeah, I think that the answer is who knows? Yeah, it's a good question. Because, I think the NFL has all the leverage, right? It's the most important partner for any of these companies. It's the thing they worry about all the time. Yeah, maybe there's a business decorum thing. Maybe they tried. Maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? But, the fact that if they get 6 more years of this, they end up in the biggest sports media contracts ever on the history of the planet, they end up dramatically underselling their value. It's an interesting hypothetical. But it does, I think, make us think more about, at least right now, I'm thinking about these deals as 7-year deals, not 11-year deals.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Even though
if there's an out clause, they're going to trigger the out clause. Yeah, things
absolutely
are going well.
And a lot can change, obviously, in the next 5 years, but it does at least start to recast the deals to me in the way that I'm thinking about them.
All right, Evan, how long has it been since you and I started talking about Roger Goodell's stated goal of $25 billion in revenue by 2025?
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to believe, like, it's 2024. You know, like, we're right there on the doorstep. They're 20-some-odd billion. I'm guessing that whether it be they choose to jog through the tape, limp through the tape, sprint through the tape, that they can get there depending on what they want to do with their business.
Yeah, who knows if they get there exactly on next year, as Roger has said.
Ballpark, Roger.
But yes, the business of the NFL is very strong. Sports betting is helping. They're doing some ancillary things around their media deals, like the Peacock deal, which you mentioned, like the new YouTube, Google, and Sunday Ticket deal. There's enough there. One of the things that I know is going to happen at some point in the next decade or so, we're going to enter a maybe unprecedented era of construction, real estate projects, new venues like what the Bills and Nashville and Tennessee Titans are doing, probably multi-hundred-million-dollar renovations. From what I understand, more than a quarter of the league is actively, maybe even a lot more than that, actively considering stadium projects of some sort. So media, real estate, we always talk about those big kind of tentpole revenue opportunities. Stadium money is going to boom in the NFL in the next decade.
The only question I have for you is who's paying for the stadiums, right? You mentioned the Buffalo Bills, $800+ million in public subsidy. The Pagulas wanted a building. Okay. The Pagulas wanted public money. Okay. You know, coming off the heels of Vegas, and Nevada paid a chunk of that cash as well. At that time, it was the largest public subsidy. I believe now Buffalo has surpassed it. Like, I'm not sure what the appetite is anymore. And I ask you, just for the heck of it, what was the leverage for the Buffalo Bills? We're going to leave the city?
Yeah.
Do you really want to dare the Bills? Go ahead. You already own the Sabres, and now you're going to have to sell that asset, because it doesn't make sense to have them both, you know, two teams in different cities, really.
The Bills are not leaving Western New York. Yeah, and the Titans, which we mentioned, also got a big chunk of public money for their venue as well. For both of them, I think the timing was pretty good. Coming out of COVID, there were a lot of states and counties and cities that were flush with money that they had to spend and had not yet spent. Those are federal subsidies that were given out to kind of encourage cities to keep spending. So the Bills are a perfect example, I think, of asking for money at the right time. But it doesn't answer your question, right? Which is, what would have the alternative been? The Pagulas are billionaires. Plural, certainly would probably have the ability, if they had to figure this out on their own. But as we see, the pendulum seemed like at one point it was swinging away from public money going to stadiums. And now, at least in the NFL, we've seen the opposite, the pendulum swing back, at least in the last few years.
This is why I look to, and I know it was a different time, but I look to the Kraft Group. And what they do up there is really, really smart. If you could Google really quickly for me, what did the Kraft Group, the Patriots, pay for their stadium? And I know it's sort of metal benches. It is not sort of equipped with all the accoutrement that some people would like. That is the trending now. So I'm talking now so you can find it.
Yeah, no, I have it here.
It's like $300-something million, right?
$325 million.
Okay, so think about this. $325 and the land around where they're building a whole bunch of businesses that feed the flywheel. You have a hotel, you have restaurants, physical therapy places. I told you the story before where everybody on the hockey team wants to go to Patriot Place and eat just because it's Patriot Place and it's near the stadium. And I'm like, you guys are insane. I'm not driving an extra 6 miles to eat at the Olive Garden when there's one like a mile the other way. It doesn't make it, but it's Patriot Place. Who cares? But certainly the secret is out, that these entertainment districts, that the real estate around, I still can't wait to see what becomes of the land around Dodger Stadium. You saw what Steve Cohen has presented, if he gets the downstate casino license, or one of them, what he wants to do to Willets Point. So yeah, I think you're right that now we're looking at the sports and entertainment district. We've already had the boom, but now sort of that rarefy. What can we do in our market? What's the best way for us to take advantage of it? And that'll certainly boost the revenue for all the teams in the league.
And to be clear, it's the hardest to do this model in the NFL, because there's only a set amount of 12 games if you include preseason or whatever it is. There's only a small amount of dates, and your venue's huge, right? This is not an 18,000 seat or 14,000 seat arena that you can do concerts in consistently throughout the year. A lot of these are outdoor venues. A lot of them are not that hospitable for a few months a year in the winter. A lot of them are very big. If you look at what the Titans are doing, it's a dome stadium, right? This is part of that push. They also have a smaller kind of concert e-venue within the venue so that they can try to amp up the amount of dates that the thing is in use. But there are NBA venues that get used, or NFL venues that get used less than 20 times a year. Right. Whereas there are NBA venues that are being in use 200 times a year.
There just are not enough tractor pulls. That's what I'm concluding
monster
here.
Truck relay.
There are not
comes
enough
once
monster truck rallies going around for the NFL stadiums.
That said, when these new venues open, when the Commanders figure out whatever it is that they're doing, when the Bills get their new venue, when the Titans get their new venue, these are all going to be revenue accretive to the league in a very big way.
Back up. I'm sorry. Revenue.
A creative. They're creating revenue.
A revenue accretive? Are you kidding me with that line?
That's the mark of someone who spent too much time on earnings calls, Scott.
Revenue accretive. Yeah, you've been listening to too many CFOs on
way
conference
too
calls.
Many
that's
earnings calls.
Revenue accretive. All right. No problem, buddy.
So let's go from a 10-cent word to Jason Kelce ripping his shirt off and drinking and jumping into the fans from his suite at the Buffalo Bills game, jumping tapping into the masses of Bills fans. I know you had thoughts on, as much as people are celebrating this as really cool, look, Jason Kelce's rooting for his brother and enjoying retirement. There seems to be a deeper story here that maybe not enough people are talking about.
Oh, I'm going to be the grumpy guy again. And I can't help it. It's my default setting. It's cute. He lifts up the girl, shows the Taylor Swift her sign. I mean, that it's by all measure, this is supposed to be a feel-good story, right? Like, am I wrong by that? Like,
yes.
Entertainment Tonight. It's everything the NFL wants. It's, look at this guy. We put it on. It goes way beyond just the core broadcast. You can get what you want. Okay, fine. But I say, and remember, I was watching The Malice at the Palace. I was the one who informed Russ Granick that it happened and Billy Hunter that it happened. We've had problems with athletes. Does nobody see any problem at all of a former NFL player who is the brother of a player on the opposing team going into the stands, climbing out of the suite to go into the seats? Nobody sees this could potentially be a problem. Like, this could start something really ugly. I mean, we all know sports fans, many are stupid. The behavior is asinine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this guy is voluntarily jumping out. Now, I would ask, since he can jump out of his designated area, he's got a suite ticket where I'm sitting, am I now allowed to climb into the suite because I feel like it and I think it would be fun? Can I take my shirt off and go into the suite because I want to see Taylor Swift and talk to her? Is that okay? I mean, again, I don't want to be downer here, but it just seems to me that, yeah. And you saw police, security went to the area. I get it. But, man, just a bad idea. This is not a good idea to mix, you know, opposing fans and family members. Sadly, because it should be. It should just be a feel-good story. But I'm watching this, and it takes one person to do something stupid. Throw a snowball at him, hit him in the face. One thing. I don't know how much he's been drinking. From the highlights, it looked like plenty. But that is just that's just a recipe. And you got to, does the NFL pick up the phone and say, Jason, stay in the suite, please. Like, we don't need this kind of headache. And then you take it to the next step where we saw another athlete, you know, get engaged with fans, and, you know, problems do occur.
I get the sense that Taylor Swift has a security team somewhere in that box that if a 300-pound drunk Bills fan had climbed his way into the suite, there would have been severe ramifications for that person in a way that there were not when Jason Kelce jumped down from the suite into the masses as well. I think you're absolutely
right. But my question is why?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
If he's allowed in my domain, by my,
you're right.
This is my spot. I bought a ticket for this spot. If he can come, if he can climb out of the box and come hang out with me, why can I not therefore climb into the box and hang out with him?
I think you're exactly right, and it is part and parcel. You flicked at it there. Caitlin Clark, women's basketball college sensation at Iowa, was injured when Iowa lost to Ohio State on the road this weekend. Fans stormed the court. A young woman holding her phone out, trying to record the court storming while storming, ran right into Caitlin.
Here I am, absolutely just steamrolling Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, and I don't think we know how serious. It seems like it's maybe not as serious as it maybe looked originally, but the failure, especially in basketball, but the failure at the college level to protect athletes from court storming, field rushing, other sorts of interaction between players and fans,
They seems tried like to have ramifications in college football, right? And that now you have the collapsible goalposts because they don't want people climbing to yank them down. That thing's going to fall on somebody.
Yeah.
And I know I sound like the old duddy. They should just be celebrating and having a good time. But you just can't have, you know, a throng of college students storming the court and being right now, you know, unfettered access to the best player in the country. Can't happen.
The NBA is the one of the, maybe the most shocking.
Somebody went up to LeBron. Oh, by the way, we didn't discuss it, but somebody went right up to LeBron the other day.
Yeah.
And he turns like, who is this dude?
The fact that you could just run onto a court at any time. Was it Russell Westbrook or Dame Lillard? I know there was some one of the big stars in the NBA has complained about this a few different times. But I think about back to sports betting. It doesn't seem it's wild to me that it hasn't happened already, that someone with a bet on a game doesn't run onto the field on a basketball game to try to block a shot or disrupt something.
I am not even going to tell you the idea that was floated by our former colleague Pete Coates.
Okay.
I'm not even going to tell you the idea that was floated. I'll tell you off the air. People wonder. Take it to the next logical step from what you just said.
Yeah.
And he said, there's enough money on the game. This is going to happen at some point.
I think you're bringing great points about different fans, different tiers of fans, and protecting them, and also, as we saw with Caitlin Clark, doing something to protect athletes from the fact that you can have 10,000 people all rushing onto the field at once before the visiting team gets off the gets off the court. And a lot of these people should look at the video. It's infuriating for a number of reasons, but this woman is looking at her phone, holding it out, clearly taking a video while she's running. It says a lot about young people as well, young sports fans.
Yeah, well, we know about that. The NBA and players could have their own security force, and I know how they would pay for it. Good segue, Novi Williams.
Okay.
Where am I going with this?
Oh, you're going to escrow.
Yeah. Good segue. They have a new deposit money this is really great, you know, savings. You just put it away, you don't know it's yours, but boom, now it hits, and now you can save it for a rainy day, or you could build an NFL team, a stadium.
A really good story last week by our colleague Kurt Bodenhausen. I think a lot of even maybe some diehard NBA fans don't know that NBA players, when they're paid every year, have a certain percentage. It was 15% this past year. 15% of their paycheck is withheld and held into in a separate account, in escrow, until the end of the year so that the league can figure out exactly how much revenue the league brought in so that they can make sure the players are getting 51%.
They want the correct split of revenue.
It's essentially rebalancing ahead of time. So you get money withheld from your paycheck, and then after the year when the audit is done, they tell you, okay, this is what we got. Here's all the money that we withheld from you. This is how much you're getting back relative to how the league did. It's very controversial in the NHL, as you know, because very often players don't get a lot of that money back.
Right.
The money is withheld and then it is kept away from them. In the NBA, it's the opposite. Most likely or most often, players get all of the money back. They're not getting all of the money back from last year, Scott, but they're getting pretty darn close. According to Kurt's numbers, 98% of the money is going back to players. That is the reason why you don't hear about it in the NBA nearly as much as you do in the NHL.
Does this qualify as revenue accretive?
It is not. It is revenue already earned or paycheck already earned. But
you're going to get back. It was gone and now you forgot about it. And then it's like, oh my God, I forgot I had this money.
I think it's under discussed. He uses the example of Steph Curry, who was the highest paid player in the NBA last year, $48 million. And it's essentially $7 million, if you do the math on the 15%, $7.2 million that he is not being paid at the time.
Thank you very much.
That he's getting back later once they rebalance all the revenue. So a good scoop by Kurt, and an interesting look at the way in which leagues like the NHL and the NBA, which promise their players a certain percentage of revenue, how they make sure that the players aren't getting too much or getting too little.
All right, Novi, and I'm older than you are. I don't know if you hold Sports Illustrated in the same esteem that I did. You know, I'm in that demographic that grew up with it, and I didn't really subscribe to that many things. I mean, I got my local paper, which was great, but I did subscribe to Sports Illustrated. Yeah, the long form was great for me, but the real attraction was always the back page. Like, I read Rick Riley religiously, and if you want to see sort of the art of a column, go check out the all of Rick Riley's columns from back in the day, and then right on to whoever took a spot, whether it was Selena Roberts. And the back page, for SI. I held somewhat sacred. I also, and I don't even know if you know this, but for a short while, I wrote a couple of pieces for SI under a pseudonym.
Yeah.
So you know, I've contributed to the magazine as well. I mean, I'm not going to wax poetic like some of the people have, but it really was sort of, you know, it was one of the catalysts for me. Of course, my love of sports was, but I mean, I would just read Rick, and I'm like, oh, what a turn of phrase! Oh, what a great topic! Oh, yeah. Look at how good was that? And then I did and again, I don't remember if you remember, but I wrote a column way back when at our former employer when I sent a note to all of the professional sports teams in the big four sports at the time, I believe. And I don't know, it just was an idea when somebody said, I want to opt out of my contract, I'm going to be a free agent. And I said, you know what? I'm declaring myself a free agent fan. My heart, my everything, my fandom is up for bid. Why should I be a fan of your team? And the Golden State Warriors went above and beyond. Congratulations to Raymond Ritter, best in the business. But the Warriors went crazy. You know, they recruited me as a fan. They had me sign a fan contract. It was unbelievable. And Rick Riley later cited my column in one of his columns. I mean, that was holy grail for me. I was like, holy God, I have made it. Like, this guy reads my work. He liked one idea. I'll tell you that story, and I got to tell you one more with Rick. Do you remember when the first time the professional bull riders came to New York? I'm like, you know what?
Okay.
I got a good idea for a column. I'm going to go sit or stand or whatever right on top of the chute. I'm going to be like right there with the bull riders as they let the gate fly open. Like, I'm going to write a column from that. This place is nuts. And I think one guy like broke his collarbone that day. And, you know, I just kind of wrote a column like, these guys are absolutely insane. Like, these are really crazy dudes. And I'm like, this was good. Like, I'm like, this was a damn good column. It came out well. I'm like, I really like this. Back page of SI comes. Riley, the bastard, totally upstaged me. He was one of the clowns in the ring. I'm like, what? Like, that's a possibility. I felt like such an idiot. I'm like, here I am in the safety of, you know, on top, and he's in the ring putting himself in front of the bulls.
So good.
I'm like, that's why he is who he is. Anyway, and by the way, Steve Ruschen deserves a shout out as well.
Of course.
If you're not reading Steve, or should I call him Mr. Rebecca Lobo? If you're not reading Ruschen, if you want to learn how to turn a phrase, read Ruschen. Like, I read it from a learning standpoint, not just an enjoying standpoint, which I did, but I would read Selena and I would read Rick and I would read Steve to learn how to write. It's just really, really great stuff. And I guess I'm going off on the tangent here, but it looks like we're in danger of SI existing no more.
Yeah, the news, and I agree with a lot of what you said. I also rushed home on Wednesdays or Thursdays to get the magazine, and I read a lot of the same writers. Gary Smith, his profiles I always loved. And it's been a rough go for Sports Illustrated in the past decade. And some sad news at the end of last week, Scott. I'll back up for a second because I think it's important context. The way that Sports Illustrated operates right now, the Sports Illustrated is owned by a company called Authentic Brands Group, ABG, and they own essentially the licensing rights to
They license it out.
Yep. Both celebrities like Pele or Elvis and also big companies.
Check.
And they are they're more or less a licensing business. And for SI has a whole licensing division, and then they had the publication, and the publication was run by a company called Arena Group. So Arena Group paid Authentic Brands Group quarterly a licensing right to be the publisher of a publication called Sports Illustrated.
Well explained.
Last week, Arena Brands did not make the quarterly $3.75 million payment to Authentic Brands Group. In response, Authentic Brands Group canceled the license for Authentic Brands to keep publishing.
Not only that, didn't missing the $3.something million payment trigger the requirement of a $40 million payment? Now that, I'm no professor, but that seems like a bad idea.
I'll get to that. So essentially, the license was revoked. Suddenly, Sports Illustrated not able to publish as a publication under the Sports Illustrated name anymore. A large majority of employees who were working there were informed at the end of last week that their jobs were being eliminated. You're right. There was a it triggered a larger provision now that Authentic Brands Group is now owed $40 million by Arena. Arena's market cap is like a quarter of that at this point. It is another kind of big cluster of bad decisions. And the end result is we don't know what happens with Sports Illustrated, the publication. Is Authentic Brands Group going to license it to somebody else? Does someone else want to try it? But to me, the most interesting part of this business story is that I get the sense that Sports Illustrated is still a very valuable brand.
This was the conversation I wanted to have with you. This is like if I am a media baron, if I am into distressed assets, you say it has a lot of value in the SI brand. I'm not so sure where that fits in these days. They've tried to. You saw the licensing on SI, like hotels and
they do real resorts, estate. Right. The biggest.
What would you do with it? What would you do to revitalize the ESPN? Just took over. That's the dominant sports brand is ESPN. I mean, nobody doubts that. What does the SI brand stand? It doesn't even stand for excellence in long form. It's not even the pictures like Walter Ayus. It's not even that anymore. I'm not sure what it stands for, so I'm not sure how I would derive the value or extract value from the SI brand right now. Please tell me how you do that.
Yeah, so the three areas that I think they have had the most success recently, the swimsuit issue brand has kind of been transformed into a swimwear fashion shopping brand.
Yeah.
And I get the sense, at least a couple years ago from folks who were familiar with it, that was a pretty lucrative licensing opportunity.
I'll ask our friends at WWD.
There's
okay.
sports betting, obviously. There's SI Bet. I don't get the sense that the product has performed particularly well.
That. That's like ESPN Bet. That I'm not sure we can include that because then you're saying there's value in the brand itself right there.
So the product doesn't seem to have done very well. They signed a 20-year deal with 888, which is an international gambling company. They get paid a set licensing fee. They get paid on top of that revenue share if things go well, and it doesn't seem like it's doing gangbusters. And then they also got a percentage of equity of 888's, Authentic Brands did, got a set percentage of 888's U.S. business.
U.S. business, yeah.
Okay. So that is, again, even though the Sports Illustrated sports
book that a meh.
Maybe okay, isn't doing meh. That well, there's economics that ABG is sharing in. And then the SI tickets, which is another, you can think of it like sports betting, another one of the many, many, many ticket buying websites, but one in which Authentic Brands got money to license the name. The margins on licensing, Scott, as you know, is very small.
Yeah, very small.
These things don't need to be gangbusters businesses for Authentic Brands Group to make money off of someone that is willing to try and use the SI brand, the SI name, Sports Illustrated swimsuit. They're doing e-commerce, they're doing resorts, they're selling books. There's a whole host of areas where being the owner of the Sports Illustrated brand name actually does seem to have some value. And the sad truth is that the what's not on that list right now is as a publisher, which is the thing that so many people my age, so many people your age, sports fans of a certain era really associate with the name.
All right, so let me ask you this then. If I'm Patrick Soon-Shiong, publisher of LA Times, and if I'm Jeff Bezos, Washington Post, and I'm looking at this, I'm not sure the value of swimsuit anymore. I mean, maybe as this, like you said, maybe it's a lifestyle.
It's a fashion platform.
I'm putting that as like still the number one brand, I think, and nostalgic, whatever.
Yeah.
Tickets and betting does not excite me. I understand you have the licensing deal, but to be in the business of tickets and betting just as a branded license, I don't see that long-term as my way of recreating this into something or recreating SI into something more powerful. So I'm really I wish it is for me, but the world is my son. The world is the focus group of one and his friends. He does not read SI. He never read SI. He doesn't care about SI. And I don't know what would make him care.
Well, I think we're saying the same thing to a degree, right? That like I don't think there is a reviving SI in any form because I don't think there's reviving it into anything that it was. I think the media world is too difficult for that. I think the sad truth is that SI lives on for the next 20 years in these licensing deals. And then when your son is the dominant
then the Bugles group, play, that's it?
Yeah, then I think the Bugles play. I think the misconception that a lot of people are making right now, I think that at least for right now, for Authentic Brands Group, I think owning SI is great. I think it's very bad for Arena, the publisher. It's very bad for journalists who work there. But separating for a second the SI name from the SI publication, I think is important, because one of those things, at least right now, seems totally dead. And the other one actually seems like it has maybe another decade or two of value before it also is very likely or very possibly dead.
All right, my friend, I'll let you close the show on all that. I used to say this was my thing. Remember when ESPN Mag came in to challenge, like, do we really need to? I thought this was the best way I could describe it to people. SI goes on the coffee table. ESPN Mag went in the bathroom.
I think that's fair. Yeah, yeah.
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 And both valuable for different reasons.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. He is right, Scott Soshnick. You can find him on Twitter at Soshnick. I am Eben Novi Williams. You can find me on Twitter at Novi_Williams. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald.
A creative.
Thank you very much to Aaron. She is a creative to the show for sure.
Yes, she is.
And so is Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman, who would like you to know that you can follow the show at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.